Well, good morning. Feels good to say that. I am super excited about this morning, and I want to take just 1 second just to, as it's sort of my first time up on stage this morning, just to personally welcome each and every one of you. You see, here at CORE, what we understand, and you've heard it echoed again and again, is we understand that life is crazy, and you have got a million things going on in your life and with your kids' life, and what we want you to know is that we feel incredibly privileged that you have chosen to take an hour out of your Sunday and your crazy busy life to be here with us. And this morning, as Rob sort of already laid out, we are in part three of this 4-week series called Flipped. And if you haven't been able to be here throughout the first couple parts of this series, or maybe you're just checking us out for the very first time this morning, you're wondering sort of where we've been and what this Flipped thing is all about. And really, over the first 2 weeks and probably throughout the course of this series, what we're going to be focusing on is what it looks like for each and every one of us, no matter where we fall in our relationship with Christ, no matter where we view the church, no matter how we walked in this morning, what does it look like for each and every one of us to begin to flip our lives? And what we've been looking at is that one of the best ways for us to actually begin to do that, to take what's happening on the inside of us and begin to restore that, is by actually flipping our perspective on some of these, for lack of a better term, tools that God has given us to help us do just that. These tools that he's provided for each and every one of us to help us actually begin to flip what's broken and beat down on the inside of us. But the reality that we acknowledge and that I acknowledge for my own life is this. Unfortunately, for a lot of us, as we move through life and our schedules get crazy busy and maybe even life circumstances have us feeling beat down and worn out, the reality is that our perspective of some of these tools over time becomes skewed. Over time, just by the natural happenings of life, we sort of slowly drift away from these things that God has given us. And we begin to see them through a different light. And we begin to look at them like maybe things like prayer and maybe the Bible and maybe all of those different things. Maybe my natural instinct is right. And they're all just a little bit of a waste of time because it's a whole lot more advantageous for me to, this fire is happening in my life, so I need to spend some time over here figuring it out. And this is happening over here with my kids, and so I need to give that some focus and some attention. And we're running in a million different directions trying to put out all of the fires in our life, and we're saying, right now, I just don't have time for that thing called the Bible. I just don't have time for that thing called prayer. But the question that we've been posing over and over and over again, one for us to ponder, that maybe throughout this series we might not even have a full answer to. But what if we thought about this one question? What if, just what if our perspective on those things were way off? What if our perspective on these incredible tools that God has given us are nowhere near how he actually intended them to be seen and used by each and every one of us? Because when life gets crazy and things pile up in front of us and we have all of these things going on in our lives, sometimes we just subtly notice, don't we? Like it's not even full bore, but we look into ourselves and we just subtly notice, well, things just aren't quite right inside of me. Maybe for a lot of us, we're sitting there this morning and so many things in our life have happened and things just haven't gone the way that we've planned them to. And so we look at ourselves and it's not subtle at all. It's pretty drastic that we can look inside of ourselves and look inside of our hearts and we realize, man, I am messed up. And we look and we see the unwise choices that we've made. And because of those unwise choices, maybe some of the trouble that's gotten us into in our personal lives. Or maybe we look at ourselves and we can quickly acknowledge that for me, I'm not very emotionally or mentally healthy right now. And in those moments of life where whether it's subtly or whether it's drastic, that we look into ourselves and we see something is just off just a little bit. In those moments, what we're looking for is what's going to help fix that? Would somebody just tell me in my life, when I'm like that terrible house on HGTV and Flip or Flop that is so broken down on the inside and looks like it's beyond repair, when my life feels like that, how do I fix it? How do I begin to get things back on track in those moments of our lives? You see, but the very thing that God created, the very things that are most useful in our lives to begin to help us flip our lives, so often we've deemed those things unnecessary because of our perspective. We've had our perceptions skewed over time of how those things are supposed to be viewed and looked at. You see, we certainly, if we were to look at our lives and be honest, me from on stage would say this and admit this before you. We certainly do it with prayer. We certainly do it with the Bible. But what I'm also willing to bet about a lot of us is that whether you have grown up in church your entire life and you frequented this thing called church, or whether you sort of found yourself skeptically looking at the church for a really long time, or maybe you've drifted away from the church over the last several months or years of your life, no matter where you find yourself on this spectrum of life and your relationship with God and your viewpoint of the church, one thing I would venture to guess about each and every one of us is this. Often we have looked on this thing called worship with a whole lot of confusion and a whole lot of questions about its value and merit, right? We have looked at this thing called worship and it leaves us wondering, why in the world does the church do that? What benefit does it bring to my life and my circumstances? Now, when I throw out that word worship and that we're going to be talking about our perception of worship and the ability of worship to begin to flip our lives from the inside out, I feel like this morning, as we really dive in, there's a couple of things that we need to get straight. So for many of us, if you've grown up in the church and you hear the church throw out this word worship, many times what you're going to see is you're going to see a pastor walk up here on stage, and when they begin to talk about worship, they're going to start throwing you lines like, well, worship is so much more than just singing. It's about every facet of your life. And while I believe that with all of my heart, what I want to get straight this morning is this. That this morning, here at Core, we are going to get hyper-focused. And while worship does encompass a lot of our life, the worship that we're going to be talking about this morning directly relates to singing. It directly relates to what many churches do in that first 15 to 20 minutes of their service every single week. And so when I talk about worship this morning, it's automatically going to be referencing this thing called singing from this stage or that we do here in this room. And so that's what we're going to be talking about. And so that's the first thing that I feel like we needed to get straight. And the second thing, now that I say that we need to get straight, is the thought that's running through all of your minds. You see, many of you are sitting there and you're thinking, we're going to talk about music today and Ben's going to talk about this. And the thought that's running through your mind is that's kind of like Ben telling us how to be a better woman or how to be a better parent, because he's never been any of those things. And from what I've heard about this guy, he can't carry a tune in a bucket. And he's about to talk to us about music and singing. And so if that's the tension that's running through your mind, or maybe you've never met me and you didn't have that tension and I just admitted it to you, I want you to know this morning that those thoughts that you're having are honestly not that far off. The reality is I am far from a good singer, and far probably isn't the right word to be plugged in there. I'm what you would probably call musically declined. And the reality is that as we move through this, I'm going to be the one bringing this to you, and I'm going to be the one talking through this with you. And what Brandon wanted me to tell each and every one of you was this. He didn't put me up to this whatsoever. This was completely my choice to do this. You see, for me, as I look back on my life and I look at this thing called worship within the church and this thing called singing, when I look at my family, I didn't really grow up in the greatest musical environment. I guess that's the way to put it lightly. This is where my mom sort of buries her head in her hands. But for me, looking back on my childhood, I never ever in my life can remember my father ever singing or hearing him sing, except for when we'd be riding in the car and we'd be flipping through the radio stations and a really twangy country song would come on. He always thought it was hilarious to try to mimic the twangy country music. And so I think that's about the only time in my life that I ever heard my dad sing out loud around me. For us, when I was growing up, one of my siblings, and I'll let you figure out which one that was, but one of my siblings would come home from school almost every single day, and he would be singing. And if this tells you anything, the nickname that the rest of us gave him was the noisemaker. And so that fills you in on the kind of quality tunes that were coming out of his mouth. And for us, the running joke in our family was always, and I hope my grandmother never figures out how to get onto the online sermons, but the running joke for us in our family for like the last 30 years, at least that's how long I've been alive, is my grandfather's singing. For all of us, we pick out people in our family when they begin to sing or we hear them sing and we say, you must have gotten that from your grandpa. He was one of the most tone-deaf people, but he didn't care. He was up there singing in front of people, and he loved it every single time that he got to sing. And you see, for all of my family, we didn't really ever get this musical bone. Now, I will say this. I'm sure my mother has the most beautiful singing voice in the world, but I did not get that singing voice from her. You see, the reality is about the only person in my life, and I use that word person very lightly, that truly appreciates my singing is Sully. And that's why Sully gets unlimited table scraps every time we sit down for dinner, because he appreciates my singing. And when I start to sing in the bed or whatever it is, he always will come up next to my face and be around me. And so I don't know if it makes him want to howl or what it is, but I take it as he really likes my singing. And so that's why Sully always has a special place in my heart. But for all of these reasons that I just explained to you guys, all of those things and my lack of being able to sing is the very reason that I love to sit in the front row. You see, a lot of you guys think that, well, I came to the church and the pastor's sitting in the front row because that's what the pastor does. Well, if you've learned anything about me over time, what you know is I don't really fall into the normal cliche of what pastors do. But for me, I love to sit in the front row because it's the only place in this room where I can stand and sing however I want to, and no one else in the room can hear me. That's the very reason that I sit in the front row. And so after this week, if I inspire any of you guys, I'd love to see a full front row up here of you guys who cannot carry a tune in the bucket with me, and we'll sing out together, and maybe these people on stage, they'll get all thrown off because we're all singing. Well, maybe for a lot of you, as I explain sort of my background in music and my lack of musical knowledge and musical talent, maybe for a lot of you, you've fallen into that exact same boat. You sit there laughing and nodding because you can relate to my background, or you can relate to the way that I look at myself musically and fully admit that I am not very good at all of this. And because of that, maybe a lot of us fall into this thought process of, because I'm not very good at this, and because we always do this worship thing, this singing thing in the first 15 or 20 minutes, it makes me feel uncomfortable when I walk in here. And why do we do this thing that leaves me feeling like I don't want to do it, and I don't want to participate, and I'm not very good at it, and I don't really feel comfortable with that? Why do we do all of these things within the context of the church? Why does core have worship at the front of every single service that we do? And maybe for a lot of us, we find ourselves holding this perspective of worship much like the rest of the world. We find ourselves looking at this thing that is all about singing and having thoughts of, there's no way that this can be beneficial for my life. Because for a lot of us, I'd venture to guess that when we look at singing and worship, we fall into one of these two perspectives, or maybe both of these perspectives in our lives. You see, the normal perspective of worship is this. That singing to God or singing in church is for people who are good at singing, right? That this is just naturally supposed to be about something that the people who are really good at singing do. Or maybe if we take it just a step further, we've had thoughts that this thing called worship is for people who actually like music. It's for people who connect musically to things and they have an ear for music. And this worship thing is just specifically designed for those types of people. Or maybe for a lot of us, this one isn't going to come up on the screen. But along the way, we've fallen into the belief that this thing called worship is actually more suited for like the women and the children in our church. Right? We've thought that before, haven't we? I mean, I've naturally thought that. Like, this thing should be for my wife. It should not be for me. She can actually sing very, very well, and I can't. Nobody wants to hear what I have to say. Nobody wants to hear those words coming out in that broken up pitch. But the reality for a lot of us is that we've looked at worship through this lens, that this just isn't something that I'm good at, that music just isn't something that I like. And so naturally, right, this thing called worship, it isn't for everyone. It doesn't have to be for everyone. It doesn't really serve a purpose in my life. And the reality is it's just sort of a waste of time, just something that is easy to go through the motions. But throughout this series, we've been posing this one question. And I want to pose it again to us this morning. What if the way we view worship, what if our perception of this tool that God has given us is way off? What if all this time we've gotten it wrong? What if somewhere along the way we've allowed our perception of worship and how God truly intended it for us as humanity to be used has become skewed? What if, and listen in on this one because this is me, what if we've allowed our own comfort zones and maybe even our own skills and abilities to determine what we place value on, to determine how we look at this thing called worship, and to even determine how much we engage in it and allow it to flip our lives? You see, what if worship really had nothing to do with the music at all? What if worship had nothing to do with how good I am as a singer or how much I like music, but it was actually intended by God to be a tool that could flip my life? That this thing called worship could actually fix what's broken inside of me without ever becoming a good singer? Right? And I know some of you guys are disappointed because you're like, well, if he's going to talk about worship, right, that means like Brandon's going to do personal lessons or something with those of us who aren't good singers. And unfortunately, that's just a gigantic waste of time for Brandon because many of you are like me. You're just too far gone for him to waste his time on that. But the reality for a lot of us is that this thing called worship was actually intended by God to be used by all of us, regardless of skill, regardless of talent, regardless of preference, to begin to do something incredible inside of us. And let's just get one thing out in the open in this. See, the reality is no matter how bad you are at worship, at singing, at this thing called music, like music isn't all that bad, is it? I mean, when you really think about music and singing in your life, doesn't music have just this incredible ability to transcend everything? Like, think about it. Music has this incredible ability in our lives to transcend time, doesn't it? When you hear that song come on the radio, it brings you back to like that incredible memory from the 80s and that awesome mullet that you used to have. or it brings you back to when you flip on the radio and you hear that song, how much of a crush you had on the Backstreet Boys in the 90s. Or it brings you back to things that I'm not allowed to talk to on the stage here from the 70s, or whatever that might be for you. It has the ability to take us back and remind us of things from our past that we love to remember, driving in our very first car and that sense of freedom that we had. Music has the ability to transcend culture. It has the ability to transcend socioeconomic status. It has the ability to transcend race and religion and everything in between. But this thing called music connects with something inside of us, and it has the ability, when we hear it, to explain things through song that we're not even able to explain on our own, are we? Like, it has the ability to communicate anger and confusion and sadness and happiness and joy and elation and everything in between. That it connects with feelings and emotions inside of us like nothing else does. And that's if you're a terrible singer or you're a great singer. That music has this incredible ability to communicate things and transcend everything in our lives and everything that comes between us as humanity. That's the power of music. And if music has that power in our lives, then don't you think that worship has that exact same power? To transcend everything that's going on inside of us, to transcend the messes and the hatred and the brokenness that's deep down inside of us, for us to be able to communicate not to each other, but communicate to God about our anger and our bitterness and our confusion and our happiness and our blessings and our joy, whatever we're experiencing in that moment in our lives, that music has the power to communicate those things in a way that I just can't through normal words. That no matter who you are or where you're at in life, that this thing called music, that this thing called worship can actually be incredibly powerful for each and every one of us, no matter who you are. And there was this one man, long, long ago, thousands of years ago, who had this figured out. His name was King David. Maybe you've heard stories about King David. I'm certain that most of us have heard the story of David and Goliath. Same David. But David, if we look back into the history books, what we see about David is that David is one of the most powerful rulers of all time to ever walk on this earth. And as he was venturing through these moments in his life where he was the king of Israel, he was one of the most, if not at that time, the most powerful ruler in all of the world, David gained this nickname. His nickname was a man after God's own heart. Right? Isn't that a pretty incredible nickname? I mean, I don't know about you, but that would be pretty sweet if God gave me that nickname. Or for you, a woman after God's own heart. Wouldn't that be incredible to have that nickname? That's what David, the only person in history, that's the nickname that he was given. A man after God's own heart. And here was this man. Yes. I said man. Who had this thing, worship. And singing. And even craziness. Dancing. He had all of these things figured out. And he began to realize that if he just changed his perspective on worship and singing, that it had the power to do something incredible inside of him. That it had the power to change his perspective on life and on the world. It had the power to change what was broken inside of him. And as he began to view worship through this perspective, he said, I don't want to be the only one who understands this. I want to pass this on to generations after me for thousands and thousands and thousands of years. I want them to understand the essence of what worship really means and how God intended it to be used. And so in the height of his kingship, he wrote this. This morning, we're going to start in the passage of 1 Chronicles. Maybe you've never heard of this. We're going back into the Old Testament. in 1 Chronicles chapter 16. We pick this up. David has become king. Everybody's chanted his name. Everybody's wanted him to become king. He finally takes the throne, and all of these blessings begin to pour out on him. And then he begins to experience the hardship of being the king and the mistakes of being a king. And in the middle of all of that, we pick up this text. In chapter 16, we're going to start this morning in verse 23. This morning, I'm reading out of the NIV. If you've got a different version in your hands, I would totally encourage you. Check out the differences there. If you don't, you can check it out. It's going to come up on the screen, or you can crack open your weekly. That's what you got when you came in, and you can follow right along with us in there. But here's what it says in this passage, David explaining to us what worship is all about. He says this, "Sing to the Lord, all the earth. Proclaim his salvation day after day. Declare his glory among the nations, his marvelous deeds among all people. For great is the Lord and most worthy of praise. He is to be feared above all gods. For all the gods of the nations are idols, but the Lord made the heavens. Splendor and majesty are before him, strength and joy in his dwelling place. Ascribe to the Lord, O families of nations. Ascribe to the Lord glory and strength. Ascribe to the Lord the glory due his name. Bring an offering and come before him. Worship the Lord in the splendor of his holiness. Tremble before him, all the earth. The world is firmly established. It cannot be moved. Let the heavens rejoice. Let the earth be glad. Let them say among the nations, the Lord reigns." Now, I read that big chunk in there from David, and I know David's using some pretty big and maybe even some pretty confusing words in there. And so I want to take some time just to break down what he was saying and just to help us begin to really flip our perspective on worship. Because what I believe with all of my heart, and this is what you've seen throughout this series, is that if we're really going to maybe just give some of these things a little crack in our lives, or if we're going to allow these things to fully take over our lives and begin sort of that restoration or flipping project in our lives, whether it's prayer or the Bible or today worship, if we're going to allow any of those things to have the power in our lives that God intended them to have, the first thing that we have to do is we have to fully understand what they are. We have to change our perspective and the way that we've seen them to the way that they're actually supposed to be seen. And so this morning, I want to help us walk through this. And I want to quickly break this down into four different things that I think if we really understand these four things that David was explaining, it begins to change our perspective on worship. It begins to change our perspective on God. It begins to change our perspective on this first 15 or 20 minutes of every service. It begins to change our perspective on worship just being about how good I am musically or how much I like or connect with music. It begins to change our perspective on our engagement in worship. And it slowly begins to transform us from the inside out. It slowly begins to sort of seal up the cracks in our foundation and tear away the old crummy wallpaper and the ratty carpet and the broken down walls and the leaky plumbing. And it begins to do something different with the inside of us. It begins to take what we understand is just a little bit off and begin to turn the dial back to where it was meant to be in our lives. You see, for us, what we have to understand is this. We have to understand that worship really comes down to these four things that David laid out. The first for us, as we engage in worship, is that what is worship all about? The first is that worship is a response. It's a response. Check this out. Here's the very first verse. verse 23, it says this. Sing to the Lord. Sing to the Lord, all the earth. Proclaim his salvation day after day. So right there, at the very top of this, what David is saying is, this is simply a response back to God. This is our opportunity. This is one of the forms that he gives us to begin to have a conversation back to him. To begin to say to him, God, here's the confusion. Here's the messed up parts of my life. Here's the things that I don't understand. Here's the things that are happening that are really good in my life. And I want to respond back to you in this. Sing to the Lord. Talk back to him. This is our opportunity to engage in additional conversation with God through something unlike prayer. Transcends everything in this world and in our lives. It communicates things. It has a conversation in ways that regular words cannot do. See, what David is saying is you need to understand that these just aren't words flying into the sky. This isn't just pretty voices hitting the ceiling and coming back down. That this is actually a response to the God of the universe. That this is a conversation with God. The second thing he says is this. That worship is actually a declaration for us. It's a declaration. Here's what he says in 24 through 26. He set me up perfectly. Declare his glory among the nations. Declare his marvelous deeds among all people. For great is the Lord and most worthy of praise. He is to be feared above all gods. For all the gods of the nations are idols. But the Lord made the heavens. You see, what's really cool about what we do in those first 15 or 20 minutes of service through this worship time is that we actually get to declare two things. Every Sunday when we get together, if you really look at the words that come up on the screen during the music as some people are singing out those words, we have an incredible opportunity to declare two things. Number one, every single week, we collectively come together and we get to declare what we believe about God. Right? That really big, confusing word, theology. Really, all that is it's a declaration of what we believe about who God is and what he has done. And probably even further than that, it's a declaration about what we believe he is going to do. That he's not done yet. He's not done in your life. He's not done in this world yet. That he's still got more to do. And we get to declare that. And then on top of that, the second thing, and you see this come out if you really look at the words, over and over and over again, is that we get this incredible opportunity to declare how big, how great of a God we have. That we acknowledge that he is far bigger and far greater and far more knowing than I am. That he's got far better control over this world and frankly far better control over my life than what I do. Every week as we sing those things out, that's what we get to do. We get to declare that to the God of the universe. That we acknowledge that you are big, that you are great, that you've done incredible things, that you're doing incredible things, and that you will do incredible things. Isn't that powerful? Like, doesn't that sound like something that I, as a lowly, messed up human being, should want to engage in and be a part of? That I should subject myself to that. And in spite of my comfort zones, in spite of what I'm good at, that I'm going to put that behind me. I'm going to jump in and do those things. That this is a response. That this is a declaration. And then, this is the incredible part. It's unlike anything else that we do in the church. That this thing called worship is communal. It's communal. Check this out. I love this. He uses this very specific phrase. Starting in verse 28, he says, "Ascribe to the Lord, O families of nations." Ascribe to the Lord, all of you families of all of the nations. Ascribe to the Lord glory and strength.
Ascribe to the Lord the glory due his name. Bring him an offering and come before him. Worship the Lord in the splendor of his holiness.
Do you realize that in this church, that one of the very things that God intended for us to do together as community is to lift up response and declaration to God as one? That this is the only thing in this church that we really all get to do and speak and say as one? We don't all listen to the message as one. We don't all get to be in the same small group as one. We don't all get to greet together as one. We don't all get to partake in the announcements together as one. Fill in the blank for whatever we do. We don't all get to serve at the same time in the same place as one. This is the one thing that is completely communal in this church. It brings in this essence of community to us. It is meant to tie us together and to push us forward together. You've heard that, right? You've heard that throughout this Flip series. That God is giving us so many of these things because he's tired of us trying to do it by ourselves. He wants us to push forward together. It's the reason that he didn't just pick Peter or he didn't just pick John and say, well, I could do so much more if I just train up one of you. He said, I want to train up a community. Because I believe the 12 of you can do so much more than the 3 of you or the 1 of you. And this thing called worship is an opportunity for us to be in community together, to speak with one voice, one mind, one vision, and one love of the God of the universe. And when we look at those first 3 things, I think it fully explains, and I want to take just a minute on this, but I think it fully explains why we do what we do here at CORE. You see, if this thing called worship is supposed to be a response, it's supposed to be a declaration, it's supposed to be communal, if it's supposed to be all of those things, then why not do that in a language and with words that are relevant to our lives? Why not do that with a kind of music that we relate to and that we can grab onto and that helps move us through and communicates the things that we're going through in our everyday lives? It's the reason we choose the style of music that we do. Because we want us, no matter where you fall in your relationship with God, no matter how close or how near you are, to be able to respond in a way that you understand, to be able to declare in a way that you understand. There's nothing wrong with the other side of that. But we choose to do things the way that we do here at CORE, through the songs and the verbiage that we pick in the songs, because we want you guys to be able to do this in a way that you understand and with all of your hearts and fully engage in it and not be confused by it. And if this thing really is fully communal, we do things for you like every single week on our Facebook page, we put the set list for every Sunday. Because we want you to be comfortable as you walk in here, maybe knowing the songs, being able to sing together those songs. We want to create a collective culture of worship here, that all of us can have more opportunities as one to engage in this thing called worship that can flip our lives. And so this fall, you're going to see it. We're going to launch something called a night of worship. You're not going to have to hear some guy get up here and talk on stage for 35 minutes. But we collectively as one are going to spend a night, a couple times a year, just responding to God through worship, just declaring to him through worship, just coming together as community. And as we do those things, this is where the rubber meets the road. This is the ultimate one. This is where it all starts and ends. This is why David chooses to end it this way, because he knew something that a lot of us struggle with. And that is this thing called worship. It's about a response. It's about a declaration. It's about community. But it's about something deeper than that, that strikes deep into each and every one of our hearts that we struggle with. The last thing that worship is all about is it's about submission. Ouch. Our ability to fully engage in worship
is about submission. Check this out. In verse 30 and 31, it says this: "Tremble before him, all the earth. The world is firmly established. It cannot be moved. Let the heavens rejoice. Let the earth be glad. Let them say among the nations, the Lord reigns." Did you catch the first word and the last sentence in there? Tremble. Know that you are weak and small before him. And then how did it finish? The Lord reigns. He has power and control over everything in a way that I don't deserve, in the way that I can't do. It's about coming to him and being submitted to him. You see, this last one, the reason that I'm ending with this one is because this last one is the true key to flipping our lives. In every single area of our lives, every relationship, every choice, every hope, every dream, every job that we have, it all hinges on our ability to submit, doesn't it? And more than anything else, our relationship with God is dependent upon our ability to submit. You see, I think we tend to believe, if you're anything like me, this is the camp that I fall into. I think we tend to believe that when we look at our relationship with God, that it's about, you know what, there are some things in my life that I'm really good at that come easy to me, and those are the things that I'm meant to submit to God in. Like, I have a really good job and a lot of money, and so being generous and giving back, that one comes easy to me, and so that's the one that I was created to submit in. Or for me, I have some extra time on my hands, and I'm really good in this one area. I love to rock babies, or I love to be with kids, or I love to play the drums, or whatever it is. I have this thing that I'm good at and that I have some time in, and so that's what I was meant to submit in. Or for me and my wife feel really close, and so I submit to God in the way that I love him and care for him and love on my kids. And we think, you know what, I'm not so good at this worship thing, I'm not so good at this singing thing, and so that one just sort of gets pushed to the side, and I'll submit in these other areas that I am good at. But the crazy thing is that's not how it works. That's not how it works for us, and here's why. Because there will come moments in our lives where you will go through some sort of hardship and it will become difficult to submit in your finances. You'll hit something and your money will be drained, or there will be something that will be calling for you to pump money into there to fix that. Or you'll have all of these family obligations pile up, or something will happen in your life and you just don't seem to have as much time as you used to. Or for you, your wife, she does something to betray you, or your husband says something that hurts you, and it becomes difficult all of the sudden to submit in that area. You see, the reality is that if we're not willing to submit in the most difficult areas of our lives, the areas that don't come naturally to us, the areas that we're not good at and that stretch us outside of our comfort zone, if we're not willing to submit in those areas, it will never work that we can fully submit in any other areas of our life. There will always be roadblocks. There will always be backing off from that. But God's saying, in those difficult areas where you're not very good at it, where you feel like you don't like it, where you feel like your voice is terrible, if you're willing to submit to me in those areas, that's when I begin to do something incredible. That's when I begin to flip you. And the very reason that I believe with all of my heart that worship is one of the greatest indicators of our heart is because of this. It's because I believe that worship for most, if not all of us, is all about submission. And I believe with all of my heart, if you've got nothing else, check in for this. I believe with all of my heart that submission always signifies the standing of our heart. Submission always signifies the standing of our heart. It's that way in your marriages. It's that way with your coworkers and your bosses. that my ability to submit to my wife automatically signifies my heart with my wife. My ability to submit to my boss or my coworker on the job automatically signifies my heart towards that person. That submission always signifies the standing of our hearts. And it's that way, to a T, with God. That when we're willing to submit our pride, that when we're willing to submit our reputation, when we're willing to submit our control, when we're willing to submit our preconceived notion of how men are supposed to act, that it begins to do something different inside of us, that it begins to change us, that it begins to flip our lives. And the really cool thing is, it doesn't just flip us, it flips others around us too. Do you get that your sons and your daughters need to see you worshiping? It's one of the very reasons that every single Sunday, we bring a whole group of kids right up here to sit in this first and second row over here. It's because we believe with all of our hearts that those kids, they need to be able to look down their row and see their small group leader submitting to God in worship. They need to be able to look across this room as we engage in worship and catch your eye and see you engaging in worship with God. As a father, as a mother, as a brother, as a sister, as a grandma, as a grandpa. That as we begin to submit, as we begin to fully engage in this act of worship, that we understand worship isn't about the music at all. It's about our ability to put our pride and our fears and even our lack of skills behind us and engage in this relationship with God. That God is always saying, I know you look inside yourself and you see a mess. I know you look inside yourself and you feel worn out and beat down and something's just not right in there. And you're wondering how to get it back on track. You're wondering how to resurrect this thing. You're wondering how to make it right again. And God is saying, I provided something for you, but it's gonna take an abandonment of your comfort zone. It's gonna take some submission from you for you to just cry out, for you to just sing to me and engage in worship. And as you do that, as you engage in it, those are the moments where I begin to take what's dirty and broken and disgusting inside of you, and I begin to flip them into something new and incredible. Where I begin to work on you and change you in a way you've never been changed before.